College Golf Talk is back. Burko and Brentley with you. We've got a lot of results to go over, some big names doing some big things. We've got a really special guest coming up in a matter of moments. One of the greats of all time, Mike McGraw, is going to join us this week on the podcast. And we're seeing numbers now, Brentley, right? We're seeing good teams, great teams do special things, and it just kind of whets the appetite for what the next 3.5 months might look like in the college game.
I think college golf has gotten a little too easy looking at some of these scores. It seems we have a record being tied or broken every single time out. But yeah, this is usually what happens when you go to Hawaii, you play some of these soft events. But as we see, things get tougher. It gets harder to make birdies out there. And I think by the time we get to regionals, teams are going to be nervous just trying to break par.
We'll go over a bunch of those results. Also talk about the news earlier this week of Charlie Woods verbally committing to Florida State. That's coming in just a little bit. Let's get right to it. The man of the hour, Mike McGraw, joining us this week on College Golf Talk. One of the great men, one of the great coaches that you and I and anyone that has ever come across, Mike. We all say the same thing. Most importantly, happy to call him a friend. And recently, Mike, you decided it was time to step away from coaching. Thank you for joining us, first and foremost. And what went into the decision for you to say, you know what, I need to take a step back?
Well, first of all, thank you guys for having me. It's great to be here. I've always respected everything you guys do in this space. But, you know, I've been talking to my wife for quite a while about, you know, I think it's about time for me to step aside. Her health issues have grown. They've gotten a lot bigger. She's had diabetes since she was a little girl, but it's affected her kidneys. And so she's in complete renal failure. So she's been on dialysis for 2.5 years. So anyway, I just told her, and it took her a little convincing, but I said, Pam, I can't any longer give the job what it deserves and give you what you deserve. And so that put those two together, she realized it, and she realized it was a good time to step away for me, for sure.
A hard decision, no doubt, when you see your better half needing you there 24/7. But from the pure golf standpoint, how challenging was it to talk to your AD, to sit down with your team and say, you know what, guys, I got more important things I need to deal with right now?
Well, it was. That was no fun as far as either of those conversations, but both parties understood. And I honestly think 25 years from now, my players will look back on this and they'll remember, you know, he made a decision for his wife, not for his career. And, you know, I've had a nice run. It's been a really good, great run to be in college golf all these years and high school golf before that. But it was time, and I think it's the right thing to do. And I think my players understand that.
Mike, I think selfishly, I wish I had gotten into this business maybe a decade, 2 decades earlier. That way we could have overlapped a little bit more. But I had a great time chatting with you a couple weeks ago on the phone. And one thing that stood out is, you know, you're a fellow podcaster. You put it to the side a little bit, but over 280 episodes. And a question that you'd always ask your guests was, what's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten in your career or in life? But no one had ever asked you that. Now, you answered that for me, but what is the best piece of advice that you've gotten?
Very young in my career. I honestly can't remember when it was exactly, but it was early in my career. The gentleman who gave the advice said, Mike, you need to act like what you're doing is important, because it really is. And that didn't hit home immediately, but when I started thinking about it, it's like, this really is important. It's important to teach kids how to live life and how to do the right things and make good decisions for the right reasons, be a good person, do the right thing. It's like, you know, a coach couldn't have given me better advice to say, this is important, act like it. And I think I've tried to always do that.
Now, sometimes it could be too important. You know, sometimes we get wrapped up in the competitiveness, all of that. Pam kind of plays a role in this too, but talk about the end of your career at Oklahoma State in 2013. What were you like as a coach during that time, and how did your wife ultimately set you right, get you back on the path to where you needed to be to enjoy and love what you're doing?
I think cognitively in my brain, I was still a really good coach. I knew what to do or how to do it or whatever. But in, at the heart level, I was crushed. I was suffocating beneath the expectations, self-imposed, some by donors, some by alums, some from Mike Holder, whomever. But I didn't handle it very well. And she could tell. And it had been 2 or 3 years, even some great finishes where we were, you know, ranked number one for 3 years in a row, never left the top spot, all of that stuff. But I never really enjoyed it. And she could see it. You know, Brentley, you were going to ask me some of my favorite moments, but I'm going to actually start with Pam. She had sent me an email in my cell phone. I got it while I was recruiting the day after the national championship in 2013. We had just missed match play by a few shots. I flew home late that night. I literally drove straight to Edmond that morning at 6 o'clock to recruit at the state junior. I just couldn't get enough work. And she basically sent an email that said, be still and know that I am God. That was a scripture that she gave me. And it was, Mike, you've got to quit letting this OCD and these expectations and all of this pressure you're feeling is affecting everything in your life. And every time we meet personally, I'm paraphrasing every bit of this. Every time we meet personally, you're very defensive about it. You're very, very positive and upbeat to the college golf world and to donors and to alums. But to me, I can see it. You're crushed. And it's not the guy I married. It's not the, anyway, she sent this email and here I am walking the fairways at Kicking Bird Golf Course at the state junior, very emotional, thinking she's totally right. I printed off that email and it's been in the inside front cover of every single team journal I've had for 15 or 13 years. It's the first thing when I open up the journal, there it is each time. And I don't think she could have said or done anything that would have been any better, but she couldn't do it in person because I was so defensive all the time. And anyway, when I got to Alabama, that was a great year. And then obviously everything's, but I've never forgotten that email she sent me. Probably the best moment of my coaching career because it made me look straight in the mirror and say, if you want to be a coach that's effective and helps guys, you can't be this other guy.
A no-brainer, Mike, that's your number one moment memory. If you don't get that email from Pam, what do the next 13 years look like for you as a coach, a husband, a man?
Probably not very much enjoyment from coaching, which is the reason I got into this to begin with. Probably bouncing around from place to place, probably not very inspiring, probably maybe out of coaching even. I would hate to think that would have happened, but it might have. And Pam, she's really, really smart. And she had finally gotten fed up with me being this guy that felt so much pressure because it was so important that he just couldn't handle it the right way. So I think she set me on a path to end up in Alabama and to spend a great year, you know, kind of recharging my batteries with J.C. Well, and then I've really enjoyed my time here at Baylor. But that was a very important moment in my career, definitely.
What are some other moments and memories in nearly 40 years as a head coach at so many different levels stick out and resonate to you?
Well, I was going to say the top five. Pam would be number one. These others are not in any particular order. A couple of honorable mentions. The 1996 Oklahoma State Class 5A State Championship. We weren't supposed to win. Jinx was the favorite. And in the van following the tournament ceremony where we won by 15 shots. I got completely overcome with emotion because I looked at these five guys and realized all five of them had started my junior golf program at Kicking Bird Golf Course. And three of them were still working at Kicking Bird. So it was like I don't know why I was overcome with emotion, thinking maybe this is one of my last state championships in high school because I'm going to coach college golf one day. I don't know. But that was a big one. Another honorable mention would probably be sleeping in Ricky Fowler's driveway during the recruiting process.
That's an honorable mention? That didn't make top five?
Because I don't know if it's legal.
Well, it doesn't matter now.
Okay, it doesn't matter now. You're right. I was over at his house. It was 11:50. I was doing a home visit, and his mother said, "Have you not got a hotel?" I said, "Well, I'll just drive down to the resort down there. It was about 45 minutes away." And she said, "No, you won't. Stay in our motorhome." And so I stayed in their motorhome, got up the next morning, used another off-campus visit. She cooked me breakfast. I went straight to the airport, and I'm pretty sure that's why Ricky decided to come to Oklahoma State. If I was willing to sleep in a driveway, I'll do anything to get a play. Peter Uihlein winning the USAM was a big deal. Winning the national championship as an assistant coach in 2000 was a big deal. Coaching the Palmer Cup team in 2007 is a memory I'll never forget. especially with guys like Dustin Johnson, Billy Horschel, Webb Simpson, Jamie Lovemark, Jonathan Moore, Brian Harman. It was a great team. But another one would be in the 17th fairway at Prairie Dunes when Alabama won the national championship over Oklahoma State. And J.C. Will came up, gave me a big hug, shook my hand and said, thanks for saying yes. The moment right there, it was like, wow. You know, he didn't expect me to say yes when he asked me to go to work for him. He didn't expect it. And I said yes immediately. And he never forgot that. And then we won the national championship 12 months later. And he said, thanks for saying yes. I'll never forget that moment. The 2018 Big 12 Match Play Championship here at Baylor, not just because the event, my teams had won bigger events through the years, you know, regional championships, NCAAs, all that. But that Match Play Championship, I've never to this day seen a reaction from five players that I saw that day. It was unprecedented. Cooper Dossie, Colin Kober, Braden Bailey, Garrett May, and Ryan Greider. They absolutely went crazy. I've never seen anything like it. They were so excited. We beat some good teams that week. Oklahoma State, I think, and Oklahoma and Texas, two really great teams, obviously. But I don't know, that was a big moment. The 2006 NCAA, a lot of reasons. Jonathan Moore had come back from the dead in golf and won the NCAA title. Tyler and Trent Leon were brothers, you know, anchoring a national championship team. And Pablo Martin, you know, he would go on to win as an amateur on the European Tour playing for me. And then Zach Robinson, who was the Byron Nelson Award winner that year. I've never seen a human smile bigger than Zach did when we won the national championship. Never forgotten that. I have that photo in my trophy case. But one thing people don't realize is that's the last team that won a national championship that didn't have a single player, not one player, have a PGA Tour card eventually. Pablo won on the European Tour three times, but none of those five guys did. And I think that must be some pretty good coaching or some real good fortune to have won that title. Those guys were great. So anyway, those are some of my best memories. But I have one more if you want me to give that. I'm dominating this.
This is great.
This is like, your show. You're joining us. This is your show.
Well, one more memory would be, and I might get emotional talking about this, but would be Scout McNealy. I know you know Scout. He's caddying for his brother Maverick on the PGA Tour, and they're a great team together. But in this, Scout came to college, and he was not a young man of faith at all. And, you know, and we weren't going to try to force that on him at all. That was not part of the plan. But through his time at Baylor, Scout eventually came to faith, and he was baptized his last week in Waco before he graduated. And I look back on that memory and I think to myself, you know, that's not something I did. So all these other things are something I was a part of and maybe had a lot to do with. I may have had something to do with this, but I would think Travis Wolf from College Golf Fellowship, Luke Dossie, one of his great teammates, they both shepherded him through, you know, his time at Baylor. But I'll never forget that, and thinking that may be the most proud or most exciting moment I've had as a coach is to see that. Scout is he's a dude's dude now. He's an awesome, he's a great, great, great caddy out there for Maverick. But that memory will stick out as long as I live. So
he's a PGA Tour winning caddy already as well.
He is that. He's yeah, definitely.
Well, Brettley, you said earlier you wish you started maybe 10 years earlier to overlap more with Mike McGraw. Well, the good thing is, as your co-host, I've got that covered. More than a quarter century getting to know Mike, calling him a good friend. And I thought about some memories of Mike McGraw in no particular order as well. And Mike referenced some of them. I recall being at Sun River, gosh, nearly 20 years ago, winning that national championship, Oklahoma State did, and to be able to cover that and always see the enjoyment of players and that coach saying, you know what, we were able to get it done. That's front and center for me. I don't know how many people realized it, but Mike McGraw, arguably the fastest eater in the world, eats quicker than anyone. And I think we were on a campus tour. We were doing some type of feature in Stillwater. And Mike said, well, we got to go to Eskimo Joe's. You got to eat the fries. It'll take a week off your life, but you're worth it. And I saw front and center in about 211 seconds, his meal was gone. Because I eat quickly. I am nowhere in consideration against Mike McGraw. No chance, no way. Mike, if memory serves, didn't you have a little incident when you were walking on greens helping players where you should have been and you incurred a lot of penalties?
Well, thank you for reminding me of that. I was coaching my first day of women's college golf, didn't know they had a rule that you couldn't walk on the greens with the players. And so I'm walking up the 17th fairway and a rules official comes across and says, "Can I talk to you, coach?" Pulls me aside so my player, Allie Griffin, did not hear. She said, "Unfortunately, have you been walking on greens?" I said, "I have." And she says, "Well, that's a two-shot penalty every time you do it, maximum of 6 strokes total." And I thought, where did they come up with that? And why can't we walk on the greens? And I said, "Yeah, I've been on the greens." And so we finished the round. We were in second place, 1 shot behind Georgia. And I said, "Girls, great playing today. Good news is you're in second place. The bad news is I just got you a 6-shot penalty. So we're going to move to fifth or sixth place. But go get them, girls. Here we go." Anyway, they were furious. The girls, "Who called that on you? Who called?" I said, "No, don't worry about it." And I've never divulged the name of the lady who got me those 6-shot penalties, and I never will. And she knows who she is. And so that night I was having dinner with my sister from, we were in New Mexico and she lived in New Mexico. And she says, "That lady did you a favor." And I said, "What are you talking about?" She says, "Well, on your very first day of coaching women's college golf, she showed you exactly how it's going to be for you, a man in a woman's world. You're in trouble." and that was 6 shots right off the bat. Golly, Mike Holder had so much fun with that. And so did Bruce Hepler, actually, because at Oklahoma State, you're the 6-shooter, the gun. Bruce nicknamed me the 6-shotter.
Brilliant. I love it. I was able to tee him up, and then you could tell it as only you could. And then I think Brentley and Mike, my last, and I could go on forever, memory of Mike McGraw, and this perfectly exemplifies who he is. I'm going to go back to Southern Highlands, spring of 2014, and we were doing a story on Wyndham Clark. He had lost his mother, Lisa, days before the U.S. Amateur. We're going on air. Tommy Roy, the NBC sports producer, like, "What do you know about this? We're going on in 5 minutes. I said, "Give me 2 minutes. I called Mike, who was then the assistant in Alabama. And I said, "I got 90 seconds. Fill me in. What do I need to know?" Wyndham makes it to match play, loses a match. But I said, "I'm going to keep an eye on this kid." And he just kept playing well. So I sit down individually with Wyndham, his father, Randall, and Mike to get a sense. It's in 27 years, the feat I take the most pride in, because Randall and Wyndham didn't know me from anyone. First time I ever met them. And shared, and that was tough to share. And that story, God bless, had legs all the way through the U.S. Open a couple years ago when Wyndham won. But there was a line, Mike, you told me. It got to a point where you said, "You know what? Golf doesn't matter anymore." And I'm paraphrasing. "We need to take care of you as a young man. You've been through so much." And then later, Randall, and it's in the feature, said, "I'll never be able to thank that man enough," meaning Mike McGraw, "for what he did for my son." I'm going to get a little choked up because the story is emotional, but that's who Mike McGraw is. That is my number one memory of the man, the coach, the person that realized this doesn't matter, this does.
Wow. Yeah, that does bring up some emotions for sure. And I look back on that in that time. That was my lowest time in coaching. I was in a terrible place. No result was good enough. We were drowning and whatever, but I knew that I had to do something for Wyndham, because if I didn't, he would be out of golf. He was going to quit, go home, and be with his mom. And I know that sounded, but she didn't want that. She didn't want that. And when I look back on it, it's an emotional memory, but it's also one that I know I did the right thing. And I got let go a month or two later, you know, just a few months later, because the results we hadn't weren't good enough. If we'd had Windham in the lineup, we probably would have made match play that year at Nationals. But I don't know where Windham would have been or what would have happened. So I appreciate you saying that. That was a dark time, but one of the lightest times of my career as far as just clarity of this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think as you told it a couple years ago, he had cleaned out his locker countless times and you would grab his stuff and put it right back in there. I mean, that's what coaches do. Yeah, Mike, I wanted to close at least on my end. There's so much change in college golf, in college athletics, transfer portal, NIL, all this stuff, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been around, gosh, for almost four decades coaching golf. What do you want people to remember about Mike McGraw, the golf coach? What do you want your legacy in this game to be when 40, 50 years from now, people look back on what you accomplished and the impact that you had?
I don't want to ever have anybody, when they see me walking toward them, when they hear my name, when they hear us, I don't want it ever to be about the results, because if it was, I'm a failure. I haven't won nearly enough tournaments or enough awards or enough to have that validate me. So I would want it to be, oh, that's the way he made me feel. Or if a young coach who's now a veteran coach of 30 years says, I remember when he stopped and talked to me at the coaches convention. I remember when, you know, I've been looking through a lot of notes and cards from coaches. I've kept them all. And it's like, yeah, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I spent that 5 minutes with him. I'm glad I, you know, took him to dinner and we talked about that. So I would want their memory or their thought never to be about results, because I didn't win enough for it to be about that. It would be about the other things, about we're truly trying to make it better, leave it better. That's kind of a shameful plug right there, but leave it better than you found it. It's like, that's really what you're wanting to do. And you can still have good results along with that. So that's what I would want to remember.
That is the perfect way to close, Mike and Brentley, because that was going to be my final question as well. You're a great friend. I continue to value our friendship in the years ahead. We thank you for joining us. And most importantly, again, continue good thoughts, prayers, anything we can ever do for you and Pam, you know where to reach us, because it goes well beyond 20 minutes with you on College Golf Talk. You are highly respected, regarded across the board, as you said, not about a guy that won championships, but about an individual that would always do the right thing. There are few and far between, Mike, and it's an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you, Berko. I appreciate it. And Brentley, thank you so much. You guys do a great job with what you do for college golf, and I've really enjoyed getting to know you guys through the years, so thanks.
Likewise. As Coach Holder told me, Mike, he said he's not convinced that this is your last chapter. He thinks you'll be back.
Okay. Well, Mike, he's kind of clairvoyant sometimes, so maybe he knows something I don't know.
I hope so. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for our job without you. And we'll continue to nag you and bother you. I can promise you that.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks again.
Pleasure. Mike McGraw joining us on College Golf Talk. We say it every week, Brentley. Oh, he's one of the good ones. He's one of the good. I'm not sure there are many better.
No. Especially as he said, I mean, he had teams, especially the ones with Ricky Fowler, Peter Uihlein, Morgan Hoffman, that should have won national championships. And Patrick Reed, Augusta State, I mean, you name it, just one thing or another happened in match play and the job didn't get done. But, you know, when people do think about Mike McGraw and talking with a bunch of his former players, that's all the stories about how he helped them get better, how he helped them chart a different path when their golf wasn't going to get them to the PGA Tour. They've had success in other aspects of life. And the job that he did at Baylor, I don't think he gets nearly enough credit for it. And they made the NCAA championship 5 of 8 years. You know, five times in an 8-year period, which had never been done in that program's history. It's hard to recruit in that state when you have the likes of Texas and A&M and Oklahoma and OSU to the north. I think he did a pretty great job results-wise, but as you see, the impact was far greater, even on guys like us.
Yeah, that's somebody, our kids are younger, but you know, we say, I'd send my child to play for Mike McGraw because you know he's going to be taken care of. We are thrilled that he joined us. And again, we continue to have nothing but the best thoughts for him and Pam moving forward. A lot of news. We're going to rip through it. The field out for the Augusta National Women's Amateur. 48 of the top 50 players in the world. It's here. Yeah, it's almost here. 6-7 weeks. And we've been treated to some special things. And likely, I'm hoping, we're going to have another great one at the end of March.
It's so nice to not have an LPGA major concurrent with it to where it takes away 4 or 5 players. I mean, we don't get it, as you know, for the women's AM. We don't get it for any other event in college golf or in amateur golf. I mean, this is truly the Super Bowl, the Masters of women's amateur golf. It's going to be fun. And Meghan Gaine, gosh, 6 times now playing the Augusta National Women's Amateur. She has played, when she tees it up, 10 double-digit events at Augusta National, considering her 4 drive, trip, and putt national final appearances. I think 10 could be the charm for the U.S. Women's Amateur Champion.
We are looking forward to that. When you and I were doing a hit on Golf Central Tuesday, literally as we're doing that hit, well, lo and behold, Charlie Woods verbally committing to Florida State. They had me on golf today, yesterday with Rex. I was up in Connecticut doing some studio work. And, you know, I gave everyone sort of the basics, if you will. A verbal commitment is just that. You sign in November, then Florida State and Trey Jones can say, welcome to Tallahassee. But every indication was it was going to be in the Southeast. You know, the schools he visited, you think about going into the class of 2027 with Miles Russell, an unranked recruit. It's going to be an interesting watch to see the development. I feel like in the last 12 to 18 months, Charlie is now carving out his own path. Results are showing that. And it's credit to the program that Trey Jones has run for 23 years, whether it's Koepka, Berger, Clanton, you're bringing in best recruits. Florida State is a fixture, and Charlie Woods hopes to be a big part of it starting about 18 months from now.
Yeah, these last 9 months, Charlie has added kind of the bona fides that you look for in a guy who's going to play high-level college golf. And I think a lot of people want to know why Florida State. I mean, you mentioned, I think, the regionality of it, staying close to home, staying within a drive to where Tiger can visit or he could go home, on short notice. I think that was number one. I think two, and it's probably not understated, is the impact that Miles Russell committing there. Charlie has become great friends with Miles. They're going to be represented by the same agent, NIL-wise, as an amateur. So, I mean, this is a connection that, you know, hopefully continues multiple years. I know people are a little skeptical how long Miles is going to stay with that type of talent. You would expect that 4 years is probably not in the cards for him at Florida State. But you know, ultimately, I think it came down to those two factors. And what else do people want to know about this? What schools that he didn't pick? I've done a little bit of digging. I know that he visited Alabama. I think Jay Sewell was in the running up until the very end. If you want to call it a final two, I'm comfortable with that. Visited Auburn. SMU was heavily in it. They had a lot of money on the table for Charlie from what it sounded like. And I don't know how involved Stanford was in the process. I don't know if Charlie thought about it, how much he seriously considered that. But in the end, I think he made a good choice. And it's going to be a place, too, with the semi-private nature of Seminole legacy, he could be shielded a little bit from, you know, some of the riffraff and the public attention that he would see at other maybe top programs that aren't as closed off. So it's a good landing spot for him. And now the onus is on him to keep getting better, because he is 21st in the AJGA. But I mean, let's be honest here. A lot of that is because he won at Stream Song, won that AJGA Invitational last May. That's a huge boost to his rankings. I would put him more in that top 30, 35 range in his class. But again, he's got a year to keep getting better. And, you know, maybe 2026, the summer, you know, when he starts playing US Junior again and all that, maybe he'll have another breakout moment.
I was projecting ahead yesterday on Golf Today of watching Charlie Woods. Well, for the last 3 or 4 years, we have broadcast the Folds of Honor Collegiate up there in Michigan. Florida State has been a staple. It's usually the first event of the fall, right around Labor Day. So wouldn't it be nice if we continue to do that event on our air and Florida State continues to go to that tournament? And lo and behold, Charlie Woods' collegiate debut front and center for 3-4 hours a day on Golf Channel.
Sounds like someone's going to put their thumb on the scale a little bit. Maybe an individual spot if he doesn't make the lineup.
Let's let him get signed, and then we can start nudging.
I think we have to talk to Alan Hobbs soon and try to get Charlie on College Golf Talk. I think that would be a big get for us. I don't think he's done a podcast yet. Maybe he won't. He probably shouldn't. Knowing us, why would he want to waste his time on you know, with a couple knuckleheads like us? But I think that'd be cool.
I've got Alan Hobbs' number in the phone somewhere, so we shall see. A lot of results, a lot of the best doing what they do so well. Let's start with the women. Stanford out in Arizona. Am I reading right? 35-shot victory with the individual champ coming from the Cardinal, who wasn't even in the starting five.
Does that surprise you at all, knowing the team?
No, yes. I'm torn because you're like, how does Andrea Revolta not make the starting five? Okay, and did she say, well, watch what I'm going to do? They're so good. They're so good. And it doesn't, you know, we're a broken record, but when the numbers don't lie, the world rankings are front and center. What a collection. What we're seeing, and I'll go back with almost a decade now. You had Alban Valenzuela and Andrea Lee. What a great 1-2 punch. And then Rose and Rachel. I think these teams from this team from 1-6, 1-7, blow those others out of the water. I mean, there is no missing ingredient. There is no weak spot. Doesn't mean they're going to win every time. Doesn't mean they got another national title in May. But, man, and they're young. Other than Mega, you got sophomores, juniors, you got world-class players that can't even get into starting five.
Well, on paper, certainly. And the numbers back up that too, Berko. And again, I think I even mentioned this on my hit the other day. It kind of gets cliche saying, oh, this might be the best ever, but this team might be the best ever. But I think in this case, I mean, you look at the numbers, they're now ranked in whatever this means, but 38.46 average points on the scoreboard national ranking, higher than number two USC. That is a larger gap than between number two USC and number 41 Indiana. I mean, this is Scotty Scheffler, OWGR type territory. I mean, you know it, numbers 2, 3, 4, 5 in the world amateur golf ranking. Mega Gane might be the best player in the country, and she was 13th at the Arizona Thunderbird Intercollegiate. And they didn't count her, I think, 2 of the 3 days. So, and you have Nora Sundberg, who was probably a top 5 or 6 recruit a couple years ago, part of that great recruiting class with Ortegren and Revolta. She didn't even play as an individual. She's just essentially a student. And how many teams would love to have her?
She'd be a 1 or 2 everywhere else in the country.
She might be, especially looking at what some of these contenders have done. I mean, USC gosh, with Jasmine Koo and Kathy Park, first time ever in a season and a half that those two were outside the top 40 at the Therese Hessian. Oregon, as we mentioned, they lose Subi Chaya, Vinit Chatham. Ariana Lau no longer at Northwestern. Other than Arkansas, who adds a great freshman in Sarah Brentenchef from France, who's gonna challenge them?
We will find out, because the numbers say they're clearly better, but that's why we love it, right? They can slip up, match play could get them, but they're really, really good, no doubt about it. Some other women's results: Cal State Fullerton, a 20-shot victory at the San Diego State Classic, and Utah edging UT Arlington by 5 at the Bowling Green Intercollegiate. We go from the women to the men. Out in Hawaii, we know they go low. Auburn, Jackson, Koivin, they win big. We'll get to that in a moment. Texas, ASU, Texas Tech, Stanford rounding out the top 5. But Koivin opened 62-62, shoots 25 under over 3 rounds to win. Auburn, 77 under, if memory serves. You know, I don't care if it's 6,200 yards, and it's not. I think it was just a shade under 7,000. That's really good. And now you have to think, hey, you know what? What they did in 2024 is quite possible to happen again 3.5 months from now.
This layout has produced some pretty incredible numbers. I mean, Winnie Ding has the 54-hole individual record there a couple years ago. I was actually surprised to know that the other program who shot 77 under, because that was a record-tying performance by Auburn, the other program was Colorado State in 2007. Not in Hawaii, so the continental United States record, but I was a little surprised to hear that, because Colorado State had some pretty good years recently back when Christian Newton was the head coach, but not exactly your type of blue blood powerhouse team. Tell you what, this Auburn squad's looking pretty good to start the spring, especially when you consider, gosh, and I sound like a broken record, this is almost parallel to what we're seeing on the women's side. Some of the contenders did not start out that well. Oklahoma State was 6th. That stands out to me. Ethan Fang did not play well. And your Florida Gators did win the CBEST, but they dropped in the rankings. They only beat UNC Wilmington by 1. So Auburn is a team that is trending up. We'll talk about another team that's trending here in just a few minutes, but I really like the depth that Auburn is showing. That first round, they sent 7 guys to this event, 2 as individuals, 1 total bogey. Jake Alpert on his final hole, Nick Kleinerman made him sleep in the bathtub that night, because you just can't do that.
That other team that is also trending nicely, Virginia, down in Puerto Rico, 18-shot win over LSU. Tigers were followed by Tennessee, Oklahoma, and South Carolina on the leaderboard. And we talked about it on Golf Central. There's no reason to think they can't make it back to match play, the Cavaliers, and maybe finish a little better than they did a year ago. All the pieces are there. And I think we had the discussion somewhere at some point. This kind of feels like the year if they're going to make it happen.
Yeah, 1 year removed from their first ACC championship. Now, not only the favorites in the conference, but I think Vegas would have them as the favorites to win it all. Ben James tied for 2nd again. The guy continues to get better on the greens, and he's becoming a guy who maybe not at the Jackson Koivin level yet, but we're going to see him breeze through and grab that PGA Tour card via PGA Tour U. And we'll see him on the PGA Tour this summer. When you have that type of horse, that type of thoroughbred at the top of your stable, you really don't need much else. But Josh Duongmany, 65, his best score to close in Puerto Rico there. Michael Lee did not play that well, but Maxi Perreger, who got in for match play last year at La Costa, he turned in a top 15 finish. So perhaps maybe they have a couple guys now for that 5th spot. That's been a big question mark pretty much all fall for them. But again, it just comes down to whether this team believes that they belong or not. I think they do. They're playing like they do. But it's going to be able to pick off some more wins like this, I think, will do wonders for a team that just really hasn't been there. They've been in match play, but they haven't been in that NCAA final. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get back. as we mentioned a couple of days ago too, and I'll repeat myself because some people who listen to this may not have seen us on Golf Central the other day, but the last time that the reigning national runner-up made it back to the NCAA final, you have to go all the way back to 2013. Justin Thomas in Alabama. They, of course, win over Illinois in the final that year and then go back-to-back the very next year. So if Virginia can get back, they know that history will be on their side for once. They might be able to nab two in a two-year span.
Another event down in Puerto Rico as well, Wake Forest by 6 over TCU. Third one of the season. First time they've won at least three since 2021-2022. So maybe the Demon Deacons sort of slyly working their way into the conversation come the postseason. You had VCU beating Sam Houston in a playoff at the Bentwater Intercollegiate. And then Xavier by a triple over Butler at Lake Jovita, not a hoops. Yeah. So that's sort of the big recap of what happened. And before we wrap it up, something you sort of brought front and center, contenders for the event name of the week. What's in play here?
So I only have two. The search capability is on our friends at Clip, the scoreboard site. It makes it tough to scroll down. Their load more button doesn't work. So I was a little bit handicapped in terms of finding, but I found two really good ones, and I don't think any can contend with this. The first one is the Oyster Shuck match play hosted by the Citadel.
Whoa.
And I know I'm a big oyster guy. I think you're a big oyster guy, right?
I love seafood. I prefer, I'll eat raw, but I, you know, cook them up a little bit for me.
Okay, so you're put some cheese and all that stuff on them and make them taste good. You're not a cracker hot sauce.
I'll do it, you know, but then you always hear that story. Oh, I got a bad oyster. You want to grill it a little bit, make sure. But yes, I can.
How do you know if an oyster is bad or not? To me, it's, I mean,
I think about 12 to 24 hours later, the oyster lets you know.
That's true. I mean, it's an after the fact. You don't know as soon as you eat it because it's like a big one big slurp and it's gone. So the Oyster Shuck match play, that's a good one. I think that could be in the running for event name of the year. But this second one, I think you're going to go with it. The Matlock Classic, hosted by Florida Southern, D2 event. Pretty good D2 event. West Florida ended up winning that. But I don't know if you're a big Andy Griffith Matlock guy, but I don't know if there's any affiliation to the TV show.
No, it is the Charlie Matlock, the longtime Hall of Fame coach.
I should know this. Jeff Babineau is looking down. Jeff Babineau is looking down on me,
and if I'm not mistaken, because I'm old, but I'm not that old, it was Charlie Matlock that coached Lee Jamson and Rocco. They had to come back in the day. So that's the Charlie Matlock. I had the chance to come across him once or twice back in the day. Absolute character. So since we were a little misguided there, give me the Oyster Shuck is the tournament of the week. How about that?
Well, what would I do without you, Burko? You're long in the tooth.
You would be better off.
I mean, to be fair, he was inducted into the Golf Coaches Hall of Fame in 2002.
2002.
And his last national champion, he actually led the Florida Southern to 7. I should know this. This is embarrassing. But his last one was 1995. So I was not even 5 years old, 4 years old. I'm going to give myself a free pass, but I'll promise to do better next time.
Well, I had you covered. Now, do you have that Hall of Fame class? Because I want to say Herb Page might have went in with Charlie Matlock in 02. This would
be I'm looking it up.
Then I have a problem. I'm going to say it's, and I could be off a year or two, but let's see.
You're off. You're off. But a very, very good class.
Buddy Alexander?
Nope.
All right, rattle them off. Who went in with Charlie in 02?
Dwayne Knight and Rick LaRose.
Two of the best, two of the great characters of that past generation.
Herb was 03, though.
Okay. Hurd was 03. I was close.
With Penley and Fred Warren. These are some heavy
Warren games. East Tennessee State. Oh, if he could have gotten Rory McIlroy to fulfill that. Yeah.
And Buddy letter. Buddy was 2001, too. So you, I mean, gosh.
It's like, I was close. Again, all these there. Years blend together. Always a pleasure to catch up. Most importantly, thanks to Mike McGraw. One of one when you talk to Mike McGraw. So I'm glad he was able to carve out some time. And our thanks to you, as always, for listening to us on College Golf Talk. For Brent Lamberco, we will do it again next week.